Hey nerds, welcome back to ZCast. And I have some special news today. We've got a guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Lithium Fox. I am a sim racing VTuber.
Sim racing VTuber, eh?
Yep.
So what is sim racing in particular?
Basically, it's where they try to simulate how real life race cars react and drive in a computer simulation. Usually most of us end up getting wheels and pedals and all sorts of different devices that we can use to try to recreate the experience that a driver would have in a real world race car. And then we race online.
So what exactly got you into that?
So it started when I was 14. No, it really did. It was around when I was like 4 or 5 years old. My grandpa actually purchased me a couple of games for our computer that we just got, an old compact PC. And the two games he got me was Microsoft Flight Simulator like 95 and NASCAR Racing 1 by Papyrus. So I've essentially, those were like my first two experiences, along with Mario Kart and Super Mario 64. And that was my first foray into video games as a whole, was those four games. I first started off on like a little Microsoft Sidewinder joystick because they didn't want to pay for a wheel for me for Christmas. But then the next, I think it was my birthday or Christmas after, I did end up getting like an old Thrustmaster Momo wheel with force feedback and stuff. Yeah, from there, I've just been playing all of the old Papyrus games all the way up until NR 2003 and NASCAR Racing Season 2003. And then when they went out of business, they ended up starting iRacing down the road with John Henry, and I've been playing iRacing ever since.
So iRacing, that's a racing simulator program, right?
Correct.
What do you like about iRacing, and like, what is a TLDR of it?
So iRacing was essentially, after Papyrus went under, they lost the license to the NASCAR license to Electronic Arts. At some point, David Kamer ended up somewhere with, who was the CEO of Papyrus and one of their lead programmers for their tire modeling. This will be important later. He ended up meeting John Henry, owner of the Boston Red Sox and Manchester United. They ended up meeting. John Henry really liked his work and wanted to essentially build his own racing sim. So they did. The big goal of iRacing was to do all of the simulation aspects that they had with the old NASCAR racing games, but to also create like a centralized motorsports entity that would allow for like competitive racing with the high-end simulations that they were trying to do.
So kind of like what we'd call an esports backing today?
Essentially, yeah. It was back before, it was like kind of around the time that the esports genre was really like getting into its strides. Like obviously Counter-Strike and stuff had been around for a bit, but like it released a little bit before I think the major push towards, like, you started seeing stuff like that on ESPN. Like I remember, I think about 4 years afterwards, I remember seeing like League of Legends in like a arcade bar at one point, and that's like my first understanding of seeing esports myself. But so iRacing has been around since around that time. Yeah.
Wow. I've been following iRacing a bit vicariously through my husband, and I have just come to really appreciate iRacing because of the level of detail they put into their development logs. Recently, they were working on it's called Tempest, their weather model, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they were working on Tempest, and they had these development updates where they were like describing how they were modeling weather and like the movement of clouds and subduction zones for rain and such. And I just don't know how they do it.
Tempest is probably one of the best systems I've seen iRacing or any racing sim developer release in recent times. They kind of go insane with it in that they not only do they do all of the different weather systems, they have like an on-staff meteorologist who helps them develop these weather patterns for the different zones. They've gone through the historical data to determine like, okay, if, because something that a lot of folks don't know with iRacing is they also have a really well-done calendar system for every track, which involves the like stuff like the sunlight equation and stuff like that to determine where the sun should be on the track and all that stuff. But with their weather system, they go back through all the historical data for a given track for that area, and it's supposed to be able to generate forecasted weather that would be realistic for that time of year, for that geolocation, essentially. So like if you go to somewhere like Daytona, it can be more likely to rain than somewhere like if they had a track in like Sonoma in California. So they, not only that, but they also even have gone through and modeled how the drainage systems work for their rain modeling. They have the rain that just pushes out of the way when you drive over it, the drying based off of the temperature and wind, all sorts of insane stuff.
I just can't get over the idea that they hired a meteorologist to do their weather simulation stuff right.
I can't wait to tell you that they also hired a bunch of people that are, most of their developers are engineers by trade, so they're like ex like Penske or Richard Childress Racing or IMSA engineers that built the simulators for their drivers there. So they have a lot of insane people. They even have like ex Unity and Unreal developers now too to try and help with their new graphics engine update that they're working on in the future. So
Jesus,
they have an insane A team on their hands right now.
Jesus, I know that they've been going into the like absurd levels of detail, but every time I hear more, it just sounds like the dream. We got basically unlimited money to make exactly what we've wanted to.
Honestly, I think it's a combination of obviously how they handle their pricing model. It is a bit steep for most people, but I think they try to really manage their finances very well, especially after how Papyrus itself went bankrupt because they lost their one and only license and couldn't afford anything more with it and got outbid by EA Sports. So I think that's probably part of why they do this pricing model now, just to make sure that doesn't happen. But also like the popularity after 2020, I think definitely helped them out with being able to get more people on staff to help with that stuff.
What is their pricing model?
The pricing model, the way it works, because of the centralized nature of it, they handle all their servers. So their server structure, from what I can tell and what I've talked with the developers about, is very MMO structured. So you have your centralized lobby of sorts with the user interface. You can join essentially see all the different races and stuff. You can join all the lobbies and stuff. You join a matchmaking essentially, and then it puts you into individual instances across that server for that particular race. So you do pay for a monthly subscription to handle all of their like online infrastructure. And then for each car and track, you do also pay a separate, essentially a licensing fee to be able to access it. So like a DLC type of transaction. However, I know a lot of people get upset with that part. They're like, what, that's crazy. They do go and individually scan every car and track and get a lot of detail for all of them. So they're also getting like CAD data, physics data from the individual owners and manufacturers for each car. And then on top of that, they even work with a software aerodynamics team that basically does aerodynamics for each car individually. So every car has its own aerodynamic profile that they put into the sim.
Jesus Christ.
At one point, they also were apparently, because they didn't have partnerships with the tire industry at the time, they were also apparently reverse engineering tires by sending pieces of tire compounds to a chemistry lab to get a breakdown of the chemical makeup of each tire so they could make an algorithm for that at one point.
Lord, I swear, every time I hear more details about this game, it's just like I have infinitely more respect for these people.
They're insane. That's why I love them.
I'd call that less insanity and more like art at that point.
It's scientific art. It's scientific art, and that's why I love it, because it's like, rather than just trying to go for just the feel, their big thing is we want the feel, but we want it to work out on paper. So they always go back and they, like, even if there's like a little bit, like, we're like, okay, this is a little difficult. Rather than just fudging the numbers, what they do is they create like a tire compound within their system that is, for instance, like, let's say a tire is too hard for a player to drive on. Rather than just make up something that feels better, I mean, they do essentially do that at the end of the day, but they try to make something that would make sense in real life that could be driven by the player. So like, rather than just like, oh, let's just make it have a little bit more grip, they go, okay, well, this tire compound needs this thing to help with like this type of chemical mechanical reaction. So they'll just try to make something that you could make in real life that would be easier for the player. Sometimes the reality is what we're experiencing in the simulation isn't necessarily what we would experience in real life for that given series, but it's something that could be made in real life for that series. From my understanding, obviously I'm just speaking as someone who just reviews everything that they say on the forums, but that's my comprehension of what they've said.
So with everything so detailed, there's gotta be some hilarious bugs though, right?
Yes. One of my old favorite videos is actually one that was made by someone who really hated iRacing and really hated David Kamer. It was called called the breakdance video. And one of the early issues that iRacing had was they didn't have a proper damage model that would essentially take parts off the cars. So with that means you don't have any sort of escape from it basically becomes an isolated system for each car, right? So let's say you get into a really heavy collision and like a tire should fly off or like some bolts should let go of like a part, like a wing or something. Essentially, the car would overcome entropy. and it would allow for the car to fly off into space or just spin forever. Like the tire would be moving so fast that it should have flied off, it should fly off the car. But no, the car would just break dance on the ground until it eventually stopped or you alt F4'd from the game. So they also had the landmine bug, where sometimes the way that the collision system work is they had this system where they had penalty forces. So if you hit a wall or the ground, it would essentially allow for the collisions of the wall and the vehicle to overlap for a moment. Then it would figure out how far it overlapped, do some additional math to damper it, and then cause the car to rebound from it, essentially trying to keep in line with, Newton's laws. Right. Unfortunately, sometimes it would just cause a nuclear explosion of sorts, and you'd watch this car just driving normally, just suddenly launch into the sky at Mach 2, where I found out that at one time I watched it, I found out that they actually did have the Doppler effect, and it created a crack that sounded like it was escaping the atmosphere a little bit. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a thing that they have modeled. There's definitely there's ridiculous physics bugs that still happen. It's not as bad as it used to be, but you still have issues where because it's a detached IK system, it seems like what they use now. You'll still have times where a part might not fully disconnect from a car, even though it should have, and it'll just rubber band backwards, so it'll keep it back and stuff. So there's all sorts of ridiculous stuff that still happens when you're doing a complex physics systems. But
sometimes the tire will pop off and then fly back on.
That one is a different scenario, but yeah, that's more of if the tire should have fallen off completely, but then for some reason it's still attached to the car for about 10 feet. And then it just pulls the car back going 160 miles an hour and just drags it backwards and launches it backwards like a rubber band. The tire coming back on part is something that is experienced through netcode.
Oh, I remember this one clip from F1 earlier. I think it was either this year or last year, where someone did grass strats in real life and the narrator had to spend 30 seconds explaining grass strats.
That one, that is such a, that's what I love about iRacing in a way. It's this natural progression of stuff where we go, wait, that doesn't happen in real life, does it? And then we find out it does. And there's a reason for it. Yeah, so for those that don't know, essentially, what happened in iRacing was they had this quote-unquote bug. I'm not entirely convinced it was a bug, but essentially what drivers were doing is during the Spa 24, every driver was dragging their left tires in the grass in an attempt to cool it. Now, this was a bug in iRacing in the sense that why it happened is when you're driving along and you're pushing the cars to the limit, the tire temp will increase due to friction and the track temps and stuff like that. There's a lot of physics that go into that. Generally, a cooler tire, because it's not at its temp limits for the mechanical grip you can pull out of the compounds, a cooler tire will have more grip throughout a run, allowing you to drive faster. So iRacing's main issue was the fact that they didn't have any assigned temp to the grass at all. So while there should be at least a little bit of cooling that can happen either due to water or grass, the amount that iRacing was allowing was just, it was pulling all of the temp out of the tire when you were in the grass. So it was a ridiculous amount of energy transfer. And so you just see every driver going down the straight with the left sides. And then someone did it in real life. And I found out actually through that and through NASCAR, because they were doing it in NASCAR even prior to that bug, that yeah, it's actually a pretty viable way to get energy transfer out of the tires. It's just usually you end up rutting the dirt underneath it. So in iRacing, you could do it an unlimited amount. In real life, well, eventually you're going to start bottoming out and it just doesn't work. So you don't want to do it too much. So, it was one of those situations where everyone's like, that doesn't happen. Wait, no, it kind of does actually a little bit.
You mentioned that you're a VTuber and you stream this weird game iRacing, right? What software do you use to do VTubing?
So the software that I use is a forked version of Virtual Motion Capture. Honestly, without them, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. And it's I had to fork it because originally I was trying to find someone to kind of try and develop this idea I had for trying to merge VR puppeteering, where you have the tracking of the body, full body, all that stuff. I wanted to merge that with the concept of using props. So real life props. Now, there's definitely a lot of VTubers that have already kind of done that, but I hadn't seen any that had done it with a sim racing rig. So I actually proposed this to a few different developers. One was the Live software team, but every time I brought it up, everyone just looked at me like I was insane. Like, what are you even talking about? What are you trying to describe here? So I just was like, fine, I'll do it myself, and ended up forking virtual motion capture over and somehow managed to get that to work.
Do you have a new name for it or something?
I describe it as, I've been calling it VT Racer internally. I'm not sure if it's a great name, but it's essentially something that I've been kind of developing for some time. Due to like various third-party software stuff, I'm not entirely sure if it's something that I can release, but I would like to someday once I can figure out the legality of it.
I mean, let's be fair. All names suck. I remember at one of my previous jobs, I ended up making this internal component called Pipe Drive Import because it was originally designed to import things from Pipe Drive, but then the requirements changed and it no longer imported things from Pipe Drive, but it was still called Pipe Drive Import. So like every name sucks.
It also doesn't help that because of the fact that it's VT Racer, some people just hyper focus on the tracer part of that. So they're like, the amount of I'm already tracer memes I got when I announced that that's what I was calling it internally, it hurt a little bit.
Oh, I did not think about that. Oh, wow. Given that you have your own software to do this, how flexible is it?
I mean, as it's based off of a virtual motion capture, it tends to have all of the feature set that it has. And I cannot credit them enough for what they've done for VR tracking software, as they've also made the VMC protocol. So it is still fully compatible with VMC protocol. It does lose out on Tobii eye tracking because I don't have the money to afford a license with them. But it has stuff like face tracking, eye tracking. It can work with any VRM realistically. I'm still working on some features like scaling the model and the rig, but so far I've tried it with, so long as it's anything around the height of my avatar, which is scale models 1.8 meters. Sorry.
180 cm, yeah.
Yeah, so long as it's like a normal human, not even like the size doesn't even matter because it rescales everything based off that now. Sorry. What it is so long as it's like a normal human proportion. So it doesn't really work well with the shoujo style male avatars where the legs are really, really, the legs and arms are like really, really long compared to the torso. But generally, any typical VR chat feminine base or furry avatars, as they usually tend to be made by people who understand human anatomy with proportions, those all work very well with it, and it all scales very well with it. On top of that, I also have the integrations with iRacing that I've built out, which are I think I enjoy them quite a well. But
you integrated it with iRacing?
So using the IR SDK provided by Nick Thiessen, wonderful developer for setting that all up. It's the .NET SDK. I was able to essentially take the information from iRacing, which they provide a heck of a lot of telemetry data, especially at the start of a session. Things from the current timestamp, they provide that all in Unix time code, which makes it really easy to convert. They have the geolocations of the tracks, and they also provide information that I use, such as the yaw north of the car. So with that, I was able to build out a few different integrations. One thing I first started off was I wanted to be able to get facial expressions if I had a collision or an incident or if I went off track. So I had that set up first where I would do these different facial animations based off that. And then from there, I was like, you know what? Why am I so bright at night? I was like, because I was doing an endurance race with one of my teams, Parabellum. We were doing the Le Mans 24, and it bothered me how bright my avatar was at night, because I was usually doing the night shifts. And the first concept I had was I could just dim the lighting. And so I, based off the time of day in the game. So I started with that, got that built out, which was a lot of trial and error. Eventually made it so I could do that. But then while I was sitting there and I got it to work, my avatar would dim with the lights and everything. I was like, you know, I'm already getting the telemetry here, and I see this yaw north feature. I wonder if I could do lighting based off of the direction of the car. So now my avatar system has essentially this fully built out integration with iRacing's lighting system based off of the sunrise equation I discussed earlier, where it can actually light my avatar based off of where the sun should be in relation to my car and the time of day. So it kind of adds this more immersive experience for the viewers, and also makes it so that they're not blinded when I'm driving at night.
Has anybody noticed that before you mentioned it?
The worst part is some people do, and it makes me really happy when they do. I'll be just driving along and they'll just be like watching and they'll be like, wait a minute. It moves when you drive. I'm like, yeah, but sometimes I have to point it out. Like it's so subtle because it's so natural. because it just seems like it's like it doesn't seem like a
it's one of those things where when you're doing it right nobody notices it, but exactly. when you do it wrong everybody does.
Exactly. And
I hate that so much.
And I even ran into that, like that, the funny part is that I noticed it myself one time too, because I have a philosophy called, take it from Metal Gear Solid 4, the idea of scene. But I've kind of expanded it beyond that, where it's like, whatever you're looking at, the thing that will bother people most isn't what looks right, it's what people notice is wrong. It's the uncanny valley effect. So when you're doing stuff with like graphics and games and stuff, to me, what bothers me more isn't what looks correct and what looks right, it's what stands out as being incorrect. So people will notice that more. But I still think it's valuable to do the stuff that looks correct in the meantime. But for my own avatar, that was actually a bug I ran into where I noticed at Daytona, I was doing something in January and I wanted to see how well the sunlight equation I was using was working with the iRacing system. So I was testing different times of year. So sun will come out earlier towards the summer. In January at Daytona, it was fine. But then like I started testing closer to daylight savings time because I wanted to see how well it would work during like an hour switch. Like also, I wanted to know how iRacing handled it. Come to find out that iRacing does have daylight savings time in it for its calendar season. They take it from an online system that they then put into the game. And so that will happen. I hadn't programmed for that, though. So I ran into this issue where my lighting was about an hour off at one point. So I had to fix that. Apparently the team didn't know they had daylight savings time in it, though. I was talking to David Tucker and he's like, I was like, do you guys have daylight savings time or something? And then I showed him the examples of what was happening. And he's like, I don't think we do. And then another UI developer was like, yeah, no, only for the UI, not for the website. They had like a website launcher versus an actual standalone UI at one point. Like, yeah, not for the website launcher, but for the UI launcher. Yeah, we do actually have a JavaScript system for that. And then David Tucker got to learn about that existing. So that's, there's so many instances where they don't even know what they have in their own sim. So that was fun for
me. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, just a side story for that one. They actually had to do a balance of performance for Mount Bathurst one time because they forgot that they had implemented a feature I asked for 10 years ago for altitude-based air fuel mixture. So as you went up this 500 foot grade on this mountain, naturally aspirated engines would actually be slower than turbocharged engines. So they forgot that was a system because the air density is lower as you go higher. And so those cars wouldn't be able to pull in as much air, and thus the engine wouldn't be able to output as much power. And they forgot they implemented that. But yeah, no, like I got to teach. It was kind of fun doing this, doing the VTuber software, because I got to go, hey, yeah, no, this has daylight savings time in it too. On top of the fact that it actually works based off of like, there was like another bug where I found out you could trick the game into, they have this system where on the calendar, you can only select dates that that specific track would normally be open during a calendar season in real life. So some tracks you can't choose, like January, like for Hungaroring. And I chose that because it was the most northern track I could choose. Yeah, no, I was able to trick the system by choosing Daytona, going into January, selecting the date, then going back to Hungaroring, which would store the date. So I wouldn't have to do anything and it would just load it. And so I was actually able to test out their sunlight equation system. And yeah, no, if you go there, it would only for January, just like you would expect for a northern hemisphere, really high north location, the sun would go up about 45 degrees into the sky and then come back down because it's going to be mostly to the south at that point. So my lighting system works entirely with that naturally.
That must have been the most satisfying thing to implement correctly.
Weirdly was, like, I still don't fully understand how I did, but it worked.
I guess when you're doing this, you must run into the case where you are having a problem and you search for something and then you find your own bug report or forum thread, right?
Yeah.
What's the most hilarious time that's happened?
So sometimes I run into issues. Being a VTubing streamer is a bit of a nightmare. It's especially because I only use one PC. So I'm at very tight hardware limits. Very tight software limits in having to manage resources very, very well with what I can run and how high graphics I can run. There's a lot of times where I just forget stuff that I need to do, though, like settings that I need on Windows and stuff. And the amount of Reddit posts and random old forum posts where I'm like, oh yeah, I changed the setting and I fixed it. I don't know why I didn't change the setting before. But I think the most hilarious one, what was it? It would have had to have been this time where I just wanted to fix this issue where my UI was just disappearing randomly and I didn't know why. I didn't understand it. And I went back into my old post and I found one where I was responding to someone else. And I'm just like, you know what? I realized what it is. I was being dumb. iRacing Live Timing has this feature where if you join a race, it will hide the UI for you for broadcasters. Just uncheck that. And I'm like, oh, that's all I needed to do. Oh, okay. Thanks, past me.
It's always the dumb thing. It's never the exciting thing.
It's usually just like a little checkbox or something silly. Or that time where I accidentally kept getting the telemetry locked on the screen, even though it was supposed to hide. It was because I was telling it to not hide. I set a 0 to a 1. So there's like little moments like that where you run into stuff like that that you remember reading on a Discord or something like that. I think a more hilarious situation I run into is when I come across my own post, though, and I said something really dumb I don't agree with anymore, but I don't realize it's me. And then I just start writing this rant post about how I'm wrong. And I'm just like, no, that's not how this works at all. And then I go up and look at the name. I'm like, that's me from 8 years ago.
I have the mental image of the Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man
meme. Yes. It's like the worst type of situation too, because you're like, when you read it, you don't even remember that you wrote that because it's so long ago or it's so far removed from how you even view things right now. And like a lot of the times for me, it ends up being iRacing systems. Like, okay, yeah, no, this is how I think the iRacing system works, blah, blah, blah. This is how this feature works. This is how this feature works. And then I go on and I'm just like, nah, indiscriminate, you know, like, listen, I need to nip this in the bud. I need to talk about this right now, how wrong this is.
Somebody is wrong on the internet.
Provide all of the data, provide the links to how, like, you know, where all the stuff is. And like, people think that I'm like sitting here like, oh, I just don't like certain people, or I'll just attack them, or I'm just a fanboy of iRacing. It's like, no, I just think information being correct. And like, I'll tell myself I'm incorrect. I'll fight myself, guys.
Fight 1v1 IRL. All Fox. Final Destination, no items.
Exactly.
Good lord, though. Oh, you mentioned something earlier. Oh, I forget what it was. I'm going to be looking at this in DaVinci Resolve and feeling like an idiot. It was something you mentioned about, like, a bad idea. And I was going to say something along the lines of, in this Christian Minecraft server, we encourage bad ideas.
I mean, sometimes, yeah, there's just ideas that I do have that I'm like, these are just terrible ideas, but in reality, they're probably actually pretty cool. I think to kind of go back on to the integrations, like there's so many more integrations that I'd like to do with iRacing that are probably just terribly useless ideas. And I'd love to see them kind of become a reality. I have to overcome telling myself that they're bad ideas most of the time. Like, oh, this is such a terrible idea. And then like I tell like Reska or my other VTubing teammates that I want to do this idea. And I'm like, yeah, it's such a dumb idea. They're like, actually, no, that'd be really cool. Why don't you do that? That does happen a lot when you're working on stuff like this.
I found that like the dumb ideas are almost always the good ones. I remember I used a metaphor at one point. It's like sometimes you end up looking through the pile of shit and you find a nugget of corn.
Well, like there's one that I've had that I've said I've wanted to do for a couple years now. And it's mostly just my own lack of understanding of how to handle shader swaps within Unity. Because again, I'm not a programmer per se. I can do programming, but I wouldn't say that like if I was given a task of like, oh, I need to set up this application to do this network transfer in a secure method, I couldn't do that. But I do have like ideas that I can integrate and implement on a per concept basis. And one that I've been wanting to do for a while now is this shader swap where I integrate with the flag states in iRacing. So like if it's like a yellow flag, I have like these little glowing teal bits on my avatar. And I've wanted to make it like glow yellow when it's like a yellow flag, or turn white if it's a white flag, or turn green if it's a green flag, that sort of stuff. So like there's all sorts of integrations I think that are really cool and visually fun to do that a lot of VTubers don't really get into with their games. And I'd just love to do those.
Yeah, I guess you are actually in a pretty unique situation because you're like fully integrated into the main game that you're playing. Not even just at like the gameplay level, but like at the literal sun level.
I guess that is a unique situation, I guess.
I'm pretty sure there's at least one game dev listening to this right now. If you have any ideas, at me somewhere and I'll pass it along to Lith. And maybe it's going to be one of those cases where it's like something really obvious in retrospect that'll make us all feel like dummy bakas, but end up fixing it.
Like, I'm going to be honest to game devs out there, please. I know that there's like an issue with like cheating in a lot of these games too, but like if you can make API level stuff for just like silly stuff that wouldn't affect cheating, like just little values that you can output, like Baldur's Gate 3 actually has like a pretty cool Twitch overlay that integrates with their game. And I thought that was really cool. I'm like, more game devs need stuff like that.
Wait, it has a Twitch overlay?
Yeah, no, like if you play Baldur's Gate 3, if you're a player live, what they have is a Twitch overlay that will show like the inventory of the players. If they get to a dialogue choice, the players can actually say, hey, we want to put this up for a vote. And the viewers can actually vote for what response the players should have. And it'll show you like how many people voted for it on the screen stuff in game. And I was like, this is such a cool integration. Why does literally no one do this?
That's the kind of stuff I'd only expect to see in like mods.
No, like that was one of those things that I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually like this is in base game.
That did you ever play the VR game Synth Riders?
Yes, I've seen that one, yes. But I haven't played it, but I've seen it.
So one of the main things that I like about it is that it has VRM support natively without having to mod it.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay.
And it has Twitch integration natively without having to mod it. It is the only VR workout game that I have not had to mod because out of the box, it's just good enough.
Can I be really honest here, though?
Oh, God.
As much as I love the VRM format for making something centralized that you can easily use across things, I absolutely hate the VRM format.
The VRM format, for the context in the audience, 3D models are generally interchangeable between engines, but just the models and the textures. The main thing that's not interchangeable is the shading or like
the skeleton.
The skeleton isn't?
Not in most, because you have to... So, let's say you're playing something like Assassin's Creed or something, right? It's going to have a completely different skeletal system than something, say, like Resident Evil or anything else. They all have, like, their own unique skeletons for, like, stuff like... Generally, the shapes are usually the same, but, like, sometimes, like... You know what? Another example, Final Fantasy XIV modding scene, as much as it shouldn't be discussed, I'll be honest. They have, like, more of a limited skeleton because they're going to have, you know, hundreds of players on screen. So they have, like, oh, they have the facial structure, they have the arm structure, the leg structure, the limbs, and then they have for every outfit, for every piece of clothing, they have the same clothing skeletal system for the all characters. But then if you go into something like Resident Evil, right, like Resident Evil 2, Leon's going to have a very specific skeletal makeup compared to, say, Ada or Claire. So for like all of their individual clothing pieces and stuff like that. So you can't just change skeleton systems without doing like different weight painting, stuff like that. So you're going to run into that issue. VRM is kind of nice because it's all kind of just based off of Unity. So they're relatively easier to swap out.
Like the way that I've been kind of conceptualizing VRM is that it's like something that has a known skeleton system, a known shader system, and other things so that it's somewhat possible to move the model between programs without breaking everything horrifically.
Correct. Yeah. Like, because it's not necessarily the skeletal system. Like the skeleton itself is going to change between models because you're going to have different heights and different, you know.
Yeah.
That's just normal. But the main thing is the fact that they all, like, the hand will be called the same thing, or it'll be the same entity across all VRM models. So like it'll know which item to call between all of them.
I forget what it's called, but the animation sliders for things like...
Yeah, the blend shapes.
Yeah, the blend shapes for speech noises, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, those are all generally standardized, not always, because obviously each model... Like mine, I have two different VRMs, for instance. I have a what I call... it's just a Seranapal. So for those who don't know this one, Seranapal is essentially the software you need to be able to do face tracking with an HTC Vive headset and the face tracking add-on. That has very specific Viseme rules that you need to follow. So you have to make very specific blend shapes to make faces, essentially. So those are all different than something like ARKit, which is what a lot of VTubers use, the iPhone face tracking system. Those are completely different facial expressions that you have to use between the two. So VRM does have some standardized ones. It's about, what was it, about 15 or so? And then, of course, left blink and right blink, that sort of stuff. But when you get into the more advanced facial tracking, yeah, it's still different, unfortunately, even with VRMs.
Oh, right. VRM is a format came out of from Japanese VTubers in... like in the age of that which shall not be named. I don't know if it's safe to say it on the algorithm yet. I did some digging into some VRMs and it actually maps up to hiragana vowel sounds of a, I, u, e, o. And it somewhat works in English, but I know that my VRM has consonant sounds programmed in.
Yes, VC Face actually does have like its own unified facial expression system as well, I think. No, not VC Face. Sorry, I was thinking of VRC Face. There's like a VRC. There's so many different facial expression systems out there.
Yeah,
kind of gets confusing because they're all similarly named. I was thinking of VRC face tracking is what I was thinking of.
Oh, like VRChat?
Yeah, it's the VR. There's they have their own separate application to handle face tracking within VRChat.
Of course they do.
And so they have what's called the Unified Facial Expression System, where it's close to both ARKit and SerenaPal, but they renamed everything, so you have to use this guide to figure out which one is which. And then I also found out that the developer that handled my facial expressions didn't include a sadness face, because there was always already one there, but I didn't know that, so I had to like find that. It was weird. VRM is really great because of the fact that it is interchangeable, and it's easy to load. The lack of custom shader support, though, does limit me in what I can do right now, so...
Maybe it's going to be something as stupid as like exposing a variable in your model somehow that you hook into.
And that
controls like the emissions color or something. I don't know. I am completely spitballing. I do not know anything about this.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I barely know anything about it. It's been this kind of like this desire for my software. I'd like to be able to get like Poyomi support working. I just don't know how to program anything really. Like I'd use Rewired to set up like controller input stuff, and then use like a bunch of other different third-party plugins, and it's a mess of something for the first .NET application I've ever worked on. So I mean
it works, though.
It does. The worst part is the sunlight was actually easier than trying to do an input animation. Like that was what was weird to me. Getting the sunlight to track and move the sun around based off of all that information, it took me about a week. It took me about 4 months to figure out how to make the paddle shifter buttons on my wheel in the virtualized sim rig to make that move without looking really weird. Like I'd have instances where I'd turn the wheel, I'd press the button, but then it would like spin it. And then I had moments where I'd turn the wheel and then the button just wouldn't follow the wheel anymore because reasons. But like if I disabled the code, it was fine. I had moments where like I'd press the button to do like the input to make it look like it was like turning in a little bit. It's supposed to only turn like 5-10 degrees in. It's not supposed to do a big animation. And one time I did it and it just flew off into the sky. And I'm like, this isn't even an animation. This is just a thing that says rotate 10 degrees, rotate 10 degrees back when I let go. What?
I must go. My people need me.
Basically, yeah, that's what basically happened. It was so bizarre, like working with IK systems for that. You just run into these weird issues. Like I've seen other people that are like trying to program like jumps in a game, and like they'll just go off in the sky and it'll just be like do. It's just so funny. Game development is honestly, as far as I can tell from even just this limited experience, is basically held together by duct tape and dreams. Nah, there's so many cool things that we can do with VTubing. Oh, okay. You know what I miss? I miss Mixer. I miss Mixer so much.
I miss Mixer too. For context, Mixer was a live stream service where their main gimmick was that they were able to get from frame emitted by streamer to frame watched by user in about like 15 milliseconds.
Yeah.
It was gnarly.
It was insane. Like everyone was sub-second for the most part. Like obviously some people, you know, further out or lower networking that had the buffer and stuff, they weren't. But like for the most part, everyone was under sub-second. And it also performed better than Twitch, in my opinion. Like it just, there was something like the load was just lighter when you watched a Mixer stream, that it just wasn't as bad. And so one of my friends had an easier time with it on a worse network. But one of the things that I feel like they missed out on is they went for like, what was it? Ninja, I think, was who they gave all that money to.
Yeah.
Is that who? Yeah. You know what they should have done? They should have given it to like Kazuna I or another VTuber. Because because one of the bigger features that they had, the lesser known features that they had, was the fact that you could do two things. One was that you could also share your game with a viewer. So like if they had their controller hooked up, you could essentially use it as like a cloud streaming service for like let's say like the NVIDIA GeForce Now or something like that is essentially what you could do. Like you could have a player watching your game take over your game temporarily. The other feature they had was that you could create these overlays that allowed for live interaction with the stream, essentially. So they could click on the video player and they could do like a full interaction. Like someone actually made a full game in it where you could play like pool and stuff. just through the stream. Like they had like a pool table game that was done entirely through the stream.
Jesus.
And one of the things I'm like, you could have had VTubers that you could have physically pet or physically fed or done all this insane stuff with. And they would have had that live there on Mixer. And I'm like, that is such a, it was such a waste that what they did with that service. Cause there was so much you could have done with it. And like, maybe you could probably do that with the new overlay systems that Twitch have now with their desktop stuff. But like, it's just, it's not the same. It's so limited compared to what Mixer had.
Man, yeah. I feel like Mixer was like the right app, the right website for the wrong year.
It's literally, if it was like a year or two later, like honestly, if it was around like an additional 2 years, I think you would have seen like every VTuber on Mixer. I don't think they would have been on Twitch.
I know, I'm only on Twitch for audience reach.
Most of the applications also just have really good native integration with it.
Yeah, Twitch was one of the first ones that popularized it, right?
Yep.
That's how it goes. I hear that you have been seeking gainful employment.
Yeah, it's been a couple months here. I've been trying to find something that works with either my long-running skill set or, you know, even one of the various random skills that someone would like to try and, you know, grow into something more, especially if you like insane people that have random ideas that just so happen to be kind of good. I'm like a full stack artist in a way. I don't know if that's a word. I know full stack developer's a thing, but like I could basically do the entire pipeline right now. From a little bit of modeling to being able to do texture art. Honestly, I think it would just be texture work. Like the fact that I don't do anything with it professionally at all, but I've been doing essentially 2D UV painting for about essentially since I was like 7, really. Because like I'll admit this, back then I think I don't know what software I used back then, but I did do like old NASCAR Racing 2 and 4 paint liveries and stuff like that. So I'd actually be able to do custom paints back then, and now I still do them for say the Mirai VTuber team. I just finished one yesterday for the McLaren 720S Evo, and they're going to be driving that for the Indy 6 Hour tomorrow. So that'll be fun to see the promo art for that. But I can also do like just really weird. Did you know I used to be like a full front end? I used to be a full front end web developer in a way too. I used to be able to do like full like CSS, JavaScript, PHP.
So that was before React then?
Before React, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I can't do React. I don't know React. That was the hard part about Mixer. That was the worst part about Mixer, actually. You just reminded me.
I mean, React is fine. It sucks, but so does life.
A lot of iRacers, for those that might not know, when you watch iRacing streamers, they'll have these different overlays that show you like the positions of other drivers, the weather on the track, the series name, that sort of stuff. I had been working on one that integrated with Mixer that users could customize themselves. So that like if they wanted to see certain things, they could. And if they didn't want to see certain things, they could, they wouldn't. And that way, when you had the recording there, it would just be a clean recording that the streamer could just have and then output to like YouTube and stuff. But the people that were watching could actually like see all the information, even like click on a driver's name and see their profile and stuff all live in the stream without having to go look them up. So you could see like their history and all that stuff. And I got it working the day before they announced that they were shutting down. So I do not know React that well, though. And I was struggling with that at first, but it took me like about a month to get my head around it.
Yeah, the functional reactive stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But like I can do like 2D art, 3D art. I do actually have video editing. I've started weirdly back. I did like a long, like 20 something minute science class video with Sony Vegas back in the day. I've been able to kind of just do like little random bits of things. Mainly for me, it's just being able to sit down and actually use those skills repeatedly, because it's like I have to relearn them because I don't use them for a while. So like there'll be times where I'll learn like this really good skill and then I won't use it for 3 years and I have to relearn it again. But I'm pretty adaptable when it comes to those sorts of things. So like I can mood. Yeah, it definitely runs into the situation where you're like, I don't necessarily feel like I know what I'm doing, but then when I do it, I'm like, no, I actually kind of did, didn't I?
Either way, it's been a joy to have you on here. Stay frosty, everyone, and make sure to get your 5,000 steps in. Peace.